We are going to continue with God stories, and I'm inviting Jeff and Lynn Privat to come and share their God story, which is pretty powerful. And I'm going to give one of you this microphone and get the other one for the other one. And we're just going to turn it over to Jeff and Lynn and let them go for it.
Hi, friends.
Hi.
Hi. It's been a while since I've been here. And I've thought about you much, thought about you wanting to hear my story. And fortunately, somebody invited me, so, and Jeff, because
our story.
You guys have walked with me through some rough stuff, and you're going to hear the story if you didn't ever hear it before. I don't know how many of you don't know our story, but Jeff will probably fill it in a little bit. But suffice to say, 4.5 years ago sent us into a kind of a rough spot, big rough spot. And then 6 months later, I got a diagnosis that required you to give me one of these blankets, bless your hearts. And so the 4 years have been bumpy. And, you know...
Bumpy is an understatement.
But we have redemption story. We have a story that says God never gives up on you. And I want you to hear it. I want it to bless you. We're here to tell a story. Just like Jen said, we don't have a doctrinal position. We don't have a theological position. What's our position, honey?
Once I was blind and now I see.
That's our only theological position. It required a journey, which I'll let Jeff talk about that. But my heart is to let your heart know that I love you, that you stuck with me, that as you didn't pamper me, you didn't come up, how you doing, Lynn? With nothing like that. It was just that you were there. You were solidly there for me. And I want you to know that meant a great deal to me, still does. So, on with the blessing. On with the good news.
Well, I've been the tag along. Lynn has been a pretty regular here, and the door has always been open to me, and I've so appreciated the embracing that I've gotten from Lorraine and the rest of you that have known me before the time of darkness that I went through. On December 2nd of 2011, you know what, I'm going to go 3 days before that. 3 days before that, the end of November, I got a phone call that every parent dreads. My son's wife called me and said, Danny has been taken to Harborview Hospital. He's unresponsive. Now, I didn't have an idea of what unresponsive was, but you know, so I said, okay, well, I'll finish up some things here at work and then I'll get going. Well, as I sat and finished up a few things, the urgency began riding in me, and I began pulling together pieces of what this could possibly mean. My son and his wife both were medical professionals that work at Harborview Hospital. He worked in angiography under the guise of the head heart surgeon there, did procedures with the heart surgeon, and was also a liaison between the surgeons and the medical staff. His wife was lead MRI, and so they're very medical. My son also was an athlete. He's always excelled in athletics and has been very good and may or may not have made a profession out of athletics if he hadn't chosen the medical field. I got the call. I went home, got Lynn, and we drove to the hospital. And he was in the neurological ICU where he spent a lot of his time. And he was in the room that he gave procedures, having the procedure done on him. He had received a blunt force impact from a sporting accident that created a blood clot in his brainstem. So he basically was gone, but they were keeping him alive. Danny and I had probably the closest relationship of any father-son relationship that I know about personally, and this contributed to the dreadfulness of this. On December 2nd, 2011, he was removed from life support because there was no there any longer. This was a decision that I headed along with his wife, and it had to be done. The life that I knew ended on that day. Danny was a giver of unconditional love. He participated in a lot of other people's lives and really was very involved in helping other people. He was absolutely adored where he worked. He was an uncle to my grandkids when Danny showed up in an event, this was the high point for all of them. It was just great. So from this point on, our lives changed. Lynn saw me in a place that she'd never seen me in. I didn't cry. I would go into convulsions because this took so much from me. I've had a good relationship with the Lord since I was, in my very, very early 20s. For one reason or another, I could not get in touch with God. There was no outpouring of peace into my heart. All there was darkness. We stayed with him again for 3 days in the hospital. I was with him, holding him when the monitors flatlined and he was no longer there physically, alive. And this impacted me horribly. I went into the zone of PTSD, which is a monster that nobody ever wants to meet. I understand what military people coming back from Iraq that have been devastated by trauma go through, because it's a weight that never leaves you. It lives with you all your waking hours. It's on your back every morning when you wake up, every night when you go to bed, and all through the day. And if you happen to wake up in the middle of the night to pee, yeah, he's there too. So I'm painting this picture because this is where I've been for 4.5 years. I've read books. I've been to seminars. I've joined groups that have to do with grieving, that have to do with grieving of a child. I got no relief from anything. They were good as far as information went, but they did nothing for my heart. So at the very beginning, the first day I was in the hospital, God spoke to me. And I heard this very, very, very faint two words: trust me. I didn't know what that meant. I two words, and it was an enigma to me. How do I trust you, God? I mean, give me some specifics so I can apply them and, get them in action and go on. Well, it didn't quite work that way. He spoke those two words to me two more times, each one getting clearer. The third time he spoke it to me, it was in the written word. It was in the Bible. And I read it, and it just came off the page: trust me. So I put sticky notes all over my work area that said, trust me. And I still didn't really know what it meant. Trust you? How? I'm in the worst pain I've ever been in my life. I can barely get out of bed in the morning. I go to my job and I look at what I have to do and I go, how am I going to do this? But every day I finished my task. I came home, but the weight never left me. Never left me. Lynn lost a husband for 4.5 years. I was there physically, but I couldn't do anything. The way PTSD works is it creates fear where there should be no fear. It creates an anxiety that chews on you like a ravenous animal. It interrupts your sleep. It interrupts everything. But most of all, there was no joy. I had no joy any longer in my life. Happy didn't live here. Lynn would try to devise things that would kind of perk me up, you know. Well, I could put a smile on the face, but the heart was dead. So I just, you know, I continued to pray. I know there were many of you here that were praying for me. There were many in a number of other bodies that were praying for me. So there's no shortage of prayer. But I was stuck. I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't know what to do. All I could do was just, Lord, you know, please just give me what I need. Help me. Guide me. You know, I don't feel connected to you, and that's what really hurts more than anything, is that I could not find an open heart in worship. I could not praise him with the freeness that I am so, that's so very, very important to my moment-to-moment life. So we normally, twice a year, we head down to Southern California and soak up the sun, charge our batteries up, and become renewed physically a bit. This trip didn't work out this time. So the spontaneous one decided, hey, let's take a road trip. So we had about a year before that, a year before this year, we had a couple come and visit us, and this was a gentleman who I went to Bible college with 40 some years ago. Didn't even remember I'd gone to Bible college with him. But they had been involved in a church in Redding, California called Bethel. And they began sharing, you know, some of the stories, and God's presence is working in an amazing way at Bethel in Redding, California. The men's group that I'm in, that's in part of Future and Hope, did a study on one of Bill Johnson's books, which is the leader of head pastor of Bethel in Redding, California, and it was called Hosting His Presence. And I thought, oh goody, I'm going to get into this book and I'm gonna read it, and this is gonna pull me out. Well, it was a great book and great teaching, but it didn't do anything for me. So we got down to Redding, California. It's what? In April this year. And I didn't know, you know, I had fallen into a hopelessness because I'd put so much energy into the prayer. I had done all the right things and nothing was working. And it's like, well, you know, if something happens, that's great. If not, I'm going to still follow God, because what are my options, you know? There aren't a lot of options. There's God or there's nothing. Sorry, but that's just the way I look at it. So we got down there and first night there, Friday night, we drove in Friday, and Friday night we met up with our friends and they took us there. There was a presence there that I hadn't felt for many years, and it was wonderful, and God began ministering to my heart. And the way he did that was he opened that channel that I was able to glorify him, and he heard it. And he glorified me as his son. And it was amazing. So that was all good. We went home that night. No aha moments, nothing like that. Just a channel of worship that was now open. And during my whole Christian walk, because I'm also a musician, or I was, that praise and worship is paramount with me. It opens that channel of communication with God that goes right to my heart. So we went to a few services, and they had healing services on Saturday afternoon, and we went to that, and it was interesting because people prayed for me, and it really, I wasn't feeling any different until a vet, an Iraqi vet who God had put an anointing on this man for praying for people with PTSD. And he came up to me, and I was in such a wash at that point. There was so much happening that I don't recall all. It was a relatively short prayer, but it's when he spoke into me that it really had the impact. And he held me and looked me in the eyes. And you know, I felt like I was looking into the eyes of the Lord. There was an intensity there, a beauty there, a peace there that just drew me in. And as he looked at me, he spoke. He said, "You need to move on." My first mental response is, great, somebody is giving me instructions again. A lot of well-meaning people have given me well-meaning instructions, and you know what? They suck. So as he spoke into that, once it got past my ears and my brain, it went straight to my heart. And I could feel it in my heart. So we went about our things. We finished. There's a lot of little particulars, but I would be up here for a very long time.
Let me tell one.
Okay.
So,
thanks.
So I'm there with Jeff, and we're in this room. We're just standing around. It's very informal. It's not formal. It's not somebody coming up and doing something to you. So Jeff was prayed for, and then this gentleman came up, and I was behind Jeff like this. So I see this dramatically good-looking individual coming at us, about 35 years old, I'd say. And he walks right up to Jeff, and he looks him in the eye, and I could see it. It was piercing, but it was piercing love. Have you ever felt piercing love? I've felt piercing hate, but I've never felt piercing love. And he just spoke to Jeff like that, and people have said that to Jeff. If they haven't said it verbally, they've said it in their heart. Oh, please just get over this, because you're making us so uncomfortable. Please get well. But this gentleman just said it, and something happened. So I left the room. I don't know where I went. I must have gone to the washroom or something. And I came back, and Jeff was on a pew on the side of the, over there, sitting with a gentleman that looked a lot like Nathan Lane. And he was small, and Jeff is tall. So they were on the bench like this. He had his arm around Jeff like this. And they're just laughing. He's just not laughing hysterically, but there's a beautiful presence there. And Jeff's just sort of there, just like in the sunshine of it, just resting. And I came along. And this is what's so beautifully cool about this particular group of people is I came along, and I wasn't necessarily where they were spiritually, and I just started talking to the guy. The guy could just seamlessly move into welcoming me and making me a part of it. And so Jeff and I left Saturday afternoon and went home and played some pickleball with the friends, and came back on Sunday morning. We don't really know what's going on. We don't know.
But there's a presence. It's unquestionable. To reiterate, that Lynn losing my presence as her husband also means that I'm the guy. I'm a problem solver. My job entails lots of problem solving. I couldn't solve a problem at home if my life depended on it. And I build things. I do all kinds of stuff. But through this 4.5 years, I couldn't do anything. I would look at a project and try to put myself into it, and I would become so overwhelmed with anxiety that I would just abandon it. So for 4.5 years, there have been an accumulation of things around the house that have been needed to be done. Some of them were pretty big projects, like removing a hot tub that we quit using 4.5 years ago. Sunday, do we want to talk about that? Okay. So Sunday morning, we go to church. Now, the fellow that we're staying, he happens to be an usher there. So this worked out really good for us because this is really a busy place and there's really a lot of people there. And probably 50% of the congregation that was there that weekend was from out of the country. This is, people are coming from all over the world to go here because the presence of God is so strong. And healings are, there are profound, incredible physical healings going on there. So we get a little handout from the ushers that morning, and they include, a little coupon, free cup of coffee, 20% off a book in the bookstore, stuff like that. And so Marie, who is the wife of the couple that we're staying with, she says, "Well, you've got to take your coupons over to this fellow over here because he's got a gift of prophecy." So so we went to him, and I'm open to anything, but show it to me and let me see it, then I'm gonna grasp it and call it mine. So I get there and he's prophesying at Lynn. I had gone to the bookstore and come out and he's talking to Lynn and I thought, ooh, this is kind of nice. And so as soon as I show up, he shifts right over to me. Now, I only can remember the beginning of what he said and the end of what he said, because in the middle I was just trying to stay upright. If any of you have ever experienced the power of God when he wants your attention, it's wonderfully debilitating. So he switched to me and he says, "I see a keyboard in front of you." Well, right at that point, I think he had lost me because I'm a drummer. I'm a percussionist. I've been a percussionist since I was, so I'm thinking, oh, this is great. He's missed this one. So then I'm standing on my feet trying to compose myself, because this is what men do. And then he says, what I hear him say then is that the words you speak will be music to people's ears. And I thought, okay, that's got some content I can agree with here, so this is good. I can't remember having knees quite that weak before. So this passed, the only thing I've noticed is that I've begun grinning uncontrollably.
Let me pause here. So I'd heard about this manifestation of a laughter of people, but I'd never seen it and I'd never experienced it. But guess what happens? He will break into
spontaneous chuckles.
Chuckles. And this is what started happening down there, is this laughter. And sometimes we'll be at home and we'll have some music on, and I look over at Jeff and he's just chuckling away, and at first I said, "What's going on?" And he
I have to leave my chuckle, and come down to the earth again, and it's like, "Whoa, babe, no, this isn't let's talk about this later."
Yeah, what happens when you're feeling this chuckle? What's going on inside? And so finally I just let it be and then got as close to him as I could and waited for the spout to fall off on me.
Overflow.
Yeah. So I'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay. So we got home and it took us 2 days to drive down there because we're old and we don't drive 10-hour days anymore, so we broke it in half. Got home and Lynn had to take a car in for an oil change, and so I was left by myself at home with God. And I thought, I need to listen to some music. Now, keeping in mind, music has had very little interest to me in these last 4.5 years. I've done just a tiny, tiny little bit of drumming, which I like to do with music. So I put on some music, and gosh, it felt good. You know, wow, this is fun. This is nice. I haven't experienced this for a long time. Did a little drumming to it. Felt good. I loved it. Haven't experienced this for a long time. Gee, maybe I should put on some worship music. I put on worship music. I was instantly wrecked. And this is good wreck. Yeah, this isn't bad wreck. Again, Lynn's gone. I've got the door open. It's a beautiful night. I'm just in worship mode. And the music is so ministering to me. And I am loving the Lord in such freedom that I have not had in 4.5 years. I was in a transcended state. I don't really like that term because I feel it used in the wrong audiences, but that's where I was. A glorious, wonderful, beautiful place of intimacy with Jesus Christ. And as I stood there, the only thing that I was aware of other than this flow of worship was how stuck to the floor my feet felt. Now, I'm 6'2", and I wear a size 9.5 shoe, which means that when God created me, He was in a funny mood. I do fine standing up as long as I keep moving, but these little feet don't work very well when I'm just standing. But this was an awareness that came to me. A little later on, He spoke to me, and He let me know why my feet felt so planted, because my feet were planted on Him. They'd always been planted on Him, regardless of me not feeling the presence of the Lord in my life for all that time. He hadn't gone anywhere. I can't tell you why I didn't feel the presence of God during this, or why it went on for 4.5 years or anything. All I can tell you is, once I was blind, and now I see. So this opened up a whole new door, because the next morning I got up and I looked at all my projects, and I figured each one of them out. Not only did I figure them out, but I took them all on at the same time.
All 4.5 years of projects, one day.
Now, I've been rehabbing a shoulder that I messed up pretty bad, and I, you know, I've kind of let myself go a bit physically. So the byproduct of this was I really trashed myself in a bad way. And but the joy of having a freedom back, and again, it encompasses everything. I felt like a leper for those 4.5 years, because you know, you can try to be happy, but when you're not, it translates right out. You know, you don't hide it. And and all of a sudden I realized that, I mean, I was happy. I'm happy. I go to work and they said, "How you doing?" And I looked at him. I said, "I'm happy." And so they started saying, "Oh, wow, this is so great. You know, we have the old Jeff back." And the man I work for goes, "No, wait a minute. Hey, no, no. This is a whole new Jeff. I haven't seen this Jeff before." Now, I've worked with this man for 24 years, so we know each other quite well. We've been through a lot of adventures together. So that's pretty much it. I get up in the morning now, and I'm happy. I look outside. I looked out this morning, you know, and I saw the sunshine. And I remember how it used to be. I would look out on a beautiful day like this, and I would want it to make me happy because nothing else was working. So I could look out on this day, and I could embrace it, and I could go, "Wow, I'm happy." I don't have a lot of I'm not going to go into theology, and if there are anybody here that you know that doubts healing or anything like that, then again, all I have to say to you is that once I was blind and now I see.
Yeah. So you remember that Jeff lost his son in December, and then I got my diagnosis of breast cancer in August, and that sent me on a spiral. He's talking about me having to live with him. Well, he had to live with me, too. And so that whole journey, again, he's told the story, and he's pretty much told my story. When I got down to, I think I want to describe it this one way. Those 4.5 years, maybe even still, I clawed to have the goodness of God in my life, to understand that God was good. That concept was being threatened through what we went through. And every effort to go anywhere or try something new or do something, which I happen to have more of an aptitude for than Jeff, but doesn't make any difference, was an effort to claim the goodness of God and let God be good in my life and people that were around me, that I would emanate the goodness of God. Because I, as Jeff said, we weren't leaving God. We weren't going to leave God, but what kind of shape were we going to be in with God?
Well, to a degree, you lose your voice for God, because I can't say that my faith went down, but what do you call it?
I don't know what you call it. PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD. Know. Yeah, there was just that encompassing hopelessness that lived there. So, and for Lynn too, and we would discuss this in our hopeless times, and she said, well, you know, aren't you mad at God? And I go, well, I get angry with him, but I mean, how do you get mad at God? I mean, it's kind of, yes, in a natural way, but no, because he's perfect and pure and has created me and all good things.
Yeah, I'm being a little bit more emotional. Yeah. I would get a little angry sometimes. And so the journey was going down to Bethel. It was just a kind of an experiment. I got there, and there's several services, but they hold about 700 people per service, and they've got an amazing worship team that really doesn't speak to our generation type of music. So we had to get over that a little bit. This is young, on fire music, the kind that I was actually born with in 1970. When I was born again, 1972, we were on fire. We were obnoxious. We know we wanted to be around us. But this was a little different. This was all of a sudden sensing the Spirit of God again. And the first Friday night we were there, there's a song that had said in the words that said, "And you will never leave me, and you will always be with me." And I could always feel this hook in Jeff. And it, whether it was real or not, oh my gosh, he's getting hooked again. Does God really with you all the time? Is he going to be with you? So I sensed that on Friday night, and I thought, no, I'm going to worship God. I'm going to go. And so I sort of said, Jeff's on his own. And I just started to raise my hands and just sort of went kind of into another place. Not another place. I'm here. Don't get me wrong. But something started to ignite inside of me. And we go back. We went to the healing on Saturday morning, as he described, where Nathan Lane was. And then Sunday morning, there's about 5 songs that have come out of Bethel that just really go to my heart. So there's a live worship group up there. They sing all those 5 songs. I say, Jesus, you're talking to me. You're talking to me, Jesus, and I'm talking back to you. I'm here, Lord. I'm here. I can be alive again. I don't have to be dead. And little did I know, but the same thing's happening to him. But it's not happening because we're glued together. It's happening because he knows us individually. He knows my pain. He knew his pain. And since then, I cannot be anywhere. If you put a record on right now or if another song, my hands are going to go up, because they can't go anywhere else. They really can't. This is my salvation. through Jesus Christ. It's his gift for me that I can, when the worst of times happen, I can lift my hands and I can hear the music of heaven and I can go with him. Go away with him. And this world can be a very unfriendly, unkind place. And if you can find that spot to go away with him, you're never going to be the same.
And, you know, you can ask yourself, what...
Hey, Jesus.
You can ask yourself, well, gee, you know, how can any good come out of something like this? And I've you know, been asking myself that for these last 4.5 years. What are you going to do with this, Lord? Well, I'll tell you what he's done with it. He's created a clarity and a steadfastness in me that maybe I didn't ever have before. I've always been a relatively compassionate person, but my compassion is now off the chart. I can stand in place for other people that are going through difficult times when they can't stand through it.
Yeah.
I can give hope to people that don't have hope because I know what it's like to not have hope. Many years ago when I was just a new Christian, I had a man come up to me and say, you know, he patted me on the back because I had some issues going on. And he says, well, brother, I know just what you're going through. Well, we came out of two totally different lifestyles, and he had no idea what I was going through. And that translated very quickly into my heart. This is somebody that wanted to be there, but they weren't equipped to be there. I'm equipped to be there. So, our purpose for being up here today is really that if there is anyone in here that is hopeless, that is wrestling with loss or whatever it might be before God, we serve a God of grace and mercy and love like we really don't understand. He doesn't just love us because we're part of his creation. He loves us individually because we are his creation. And so my prayer is that hearts would be blessed today. Any ear that hears something that they can apply that's of goodness, then great. Because that's what Jesus Christ is. He is a goodness and great God.
He's a good, good Father.
That's who he is.
And I'm loved by him.
That's who I am. Our gift is not singing. So thank you.
And I just want to say thank you to this lady. This lady, those 3 days in the hospital with Danny, she stayed the whole time. And there's what, hundreds of people going back and forth with Danny, right?
Tons of people.
But Lorraine was there. She was there on a, looked like a pew. I don't know what it was, Lorraine, but the goodness of God, the goodness of you people, it does not go unnoticed. No. Thank you, Lorraine. I love you.
Thank you. I love you, too. And it was a pretty amazing time in the hospital. I've never seen so many people come to tell Danny, anyone goodbye, as came to tell Danny goodbye. And this love that was felt was tangible, as there's probably 50 people that would gather in a big circle and just be with you. So it was an amazing thing to be there and to observe that kind of love. But then to see the miracle that God has done in you is, I am so, so grateful. And we are grateful. Thank you. Thank you. There aren't words to express the joy that we feel in hearing this kind of story, just to know that God is good and that God does meet us in those places of pain when we cry out for so long and wonder if maybe God has forgotten.
And
this is it. We just got to survive and, you know, that's it. Then maybe it'll, you know, someday after I'm dead and gone, there'll be restoration, but to know that it can happen now. And that God doesn't forget, and that is, we just gotta persist and hang in there, but God will come all the way to us wherever we are. That is huge, and I'm just so grateful for you telling that story. I also, yes. If you would get the...
No, I won't.
I need you to use the microphone.
In way of the Spirit, we go, stunning!
Okay. Yes. Stunning!
There is something liberating about moving your body.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
There is something liberating about traveling 1,000 miles to go and find him. Or mm-hmm. There is something about moving in the Spirit. So if you feel inclined to lift your hands up in faith or whatever, try a physical manifestation of your love for Jesus. See what happens.
Yeah. Okay, back to Mark. That grin is giving him cramps. I love it. I love it. I also am just grateful because 2 weeks ago we talked about Acts 3 and how Peter and John were going into the temple and there was a man that was begging and he was asking for money. And Peter and said to him, I have no silver or gold, but what I have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, stand up and walk. The power of that was really open to us in open worship as we really kind of wrestled with this idea that it's what I have that I give to you. The power of a man from Iraq that have been healed of PTSD, recognized PTSD in you and spoke directly to the pain place. And because he had been healed, power flowed through him to touch you in a way that none other had been able to touch. Because he had been healed. So recognizing the power of what God has done in us, That is how the power moves through us. God uses, God joins the miracle of what God is healed within of how God works in us to reach another person. And that's why we can give what we have. And I was just so taken with the truth of your story and how that bears witness. And my understanding, I'm going to put you on the spot, my understanding is that you have prayed for other people with PTSD. Is that true?
No.
Oh, shucks. You might try it.
I have prayed for other people, and there is such thing as an overflow because I've experienced it.
Okay, well, great. But I just to know that God's power of healing works through us and it does flow from you into others. And for that, I am so, so grateful. Yeah. Let's go into a time of open worship, a time of waiting, both in gratitude for what God has done among you and for what God is doing in all of us, as well as reflecting on how is it that we're called to be faithful. Let us listen.